To the other's gang, two sisters, both curious and strange. A likely duo and they witty from the brain. It's the magic hour, Mercedes and Jay.
Greetings, boys and babes. It's the magic hour, a place where we navigate through life's peaks and valleys with all the vulnerability and shamelessness we can muster. With the help of world-class guests from all walks of life, we uncover new truths and valuable tools for manifesting our highest potential. I'm your host, Mercedes Terrell, along with my partner in shine, Jade Bryce.
Hi, you guys. I recently participated in Unify's global meditation event, and it was a 12-hour event during quarantine, so we all tuned in through Facebook Live. I turned it on when it first began, thinking I'd just pop in and out, but I was immediately hooked. Each speaker gave so much hope in the middle of so much panic and fear, and we have booked a few of them for the show. Today we are having on one of the doctors that just blew me away. She is not only my articulation goals, but she speaks so much truth that you feel like you are at a higher frequency by just hearing it.
Yes, and although she's a medical doctor, a lot of what she's going to talk about today will not sound exactly doctor-like, but it is so fundamental in understanding where our culture is at today, so please stay open to it.
Yes. Our guest today has been in medical practice for 16 years and is the founder and medical director of CLEAR Center of Health, an interdisciplinary integrative medical clinic in Mill Valley, California. Throughout her career, she's become a nationally recognized expert, speaker, and community educator, and has been featured in Vogue magazine and many documentaries on integrative medicine. She has organized educational symposia on integrative medicine for the allopathic community, planned interdisciplinary health science curricula on integrative medicine, and helped start a university department that coordinated research, clinical services, and education in spirituality, cross-cultural medicine, and integrative medicine. For these and other efforts, she was honored by the American Holistic Medical Association.
Yes, she combines her Western allopathic internal medicine training with functional, orthomolecular, and European biological medicine. Over the last 5 years, her diagnostic skills and intuition have been enhanced by completing a master's certificate program at the Academy of Intuition. That's the Academy of Intuition Medicine. She became one of the first doctors in the U.S. to practice bioresonance analysis of health, that's BAH, an advanced evaluation system that utilizes quantum principles to analyze all aspects of a patient's health and develop a highly specific and personalized program of treatment. She is also one of a few U.S. practitioners of ACMOS, a quantum-based energy balancing treatment. These energetic technologies have revolutionized her practice and have allowed her to unravel the most complex of medical cases. If you're not intrigued by now, you must not be paying attention to this introduction. We are so excited to welcome Dr. Beth McDougall to the Magic Hour.
Yay!
Hi!
Hi! So, something you said during Unify's event really stuck with me. It was that we must never underestimate the power of a pattern interrupt. And I felt that so deeply. And you also asked, could it be that COVID-19 is emerging as a deep expression of the unified field in response to all of the dissonant systems and short-sighted thinking? So both of those, I remember like for days after, it just kept going in my head. So thank you so much for that. And so we want to talk about that with you. But before, we wanted to get a little bit of your own history and what brought you to being the incredible light that you are today in the medical industry.
Well, I've been practicing for 22 years, and before I even went to medical school, I was interested in medicine of indigenous cultures. And right at that time in the late 80s, psychoneuroimmunology was starting to be researched. And so that was looking at the connection between, you know, our minds and our bodies. And I was really interested at that time in energy medicine and the energetic field of a human being and the chakras and all of that, and started meditating at a really young age. And so I went through medical school, did a residency in internal medicine, and I knew from the very beginning that I was never going to have an actual standard medical practice. I knew I would always do an integrative practice. And at the time that I started, I was more interested in kind of nutritional biochemistry and looking at how I could affect changes in the body by using things that are native to the body, like amino acids and vitamins and minerals and essential fatty acids. And then I got really into bioidentical hormone balancing and was working and became kind of a specialist in that. And natural neurotransmitter balancing, working with amino acids and B vitamins and cofactors to kind of augment or shift the neurotransmitter levels in the brain. And then I ended up with a health crisis personally back in 2004. I developed Lyme disease, and it was a kind of like a needle across the record, like abrupt change in my life, because, you know, I had this thriving medical practice, a young daughter and husband, and we were just buying a new house, moving within Mill Valley. And then all of a sudden one day it felt like I'd had a stroke and went to the hospital, had a multi-million dollar, that's what it felt like, multi-thousand dollar workup. And they really, I left without answers and was able to figure it out on my own through doing my own blood work. It was Lyme disease. And I was urged by my colleagues to do a massive kind of like antibiotic protocol to treat it, because it already seemed to be in my nervous system. And I tried that just briefly. I don't even know if I could complete 3 weeks. And I just was like, you know what? This doesn't feel right. I don't like this chemical warfare paradigm. It doesn't speak to me. And so I just forged my own path through that. And, you know, looking at, of course, on a physical level, like, you know, what can I take from the standpoint of herbs and, you know, oxidative treatments and nutrients and homeopathy and things like that. But really the vast majority of the work I did that helped me get over it was working on a psycho-spiritual level and doing a lot of energy work on myself and working with different healers and delving deeply into a meditation practice. And so a lot of what I do today is what I learned in my healing of myself and my own health journey. And this is what I'm doing now with patients, is trying to create a set of circumstances for people, almost like a vessel of sorts, so that they can tune in on a deep level to their energetic terrain and get a stronger sense about where dissonance is in their system.
Yeah. Do you think that what brings to mind for me, all that brings to mind for me is this idea that I think a lot of us has, that the thing that's happening to us, you know, first of all, that things are happening to us instead of for us, but also that when we feel something wrong in our body, that it must be some disease, something that we can label in the medical field, and we really look last at the psycho or spiritual side of things. And we avoid digging into the psyche and figuring out what that really looks like, because there's been so much, maybe because it's the taboo that's been placed around it. But I just was wondering, since you went through that whole course of action of seeing, okay, I figured out now I have this thing in me, this Lyme disease. How do I rid myself of something, which Lyme disease is, you know, they say you can't rid yourself of it if you talk about the mainstream medical society, right? But we've had now several people on the show who are specialists at getting rid of Lyme disease. And they also speak to that same idea of, there are some things you can do to bind this stuff and get it, you know, pass it, detox it out of your system. But there's so much of it that is actually only conquered by doing that inner work and seeing why you're holding on to this disease, why you're identifying with this thing. So absolutely, I would love for you to dive deeper into your experience on that before we move on.
Thank you. I will. Cause I think it's such an important thing to be thinking about, even in this current situation we find ourselves in with this COVID epidemic, pandemic, I guess you could say. So I think that, you know, occasionally someone gets bit by a tick and they get a bug and they can treat it within, you know, 3 weeks. You know, maybe there are appropriate circumstances for some short-term use of antibiotics. But when someone gets an infection and it really takes hold and it's this becomes this chronic thing, mm-hmm. usually there's deeper levels of dissonance that have to be identified and cleared so that you can then clear on that physical level and rid yourself of the infection. And it's almost like the infection is symbolic on some level of this deeper dissonance mm-hmm. that you have. I've always thought about, and I've noticed so many times in my medical practice, in my really sick patients, that as they do the clearing on a really deep level, you know, it's like they can finally shed these infections and
like spontaneous self-healing in a sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's some sort of breaching of boundaries, like early in life, you know, it's like there's some traumatic experiences, that create almost like a rift in this energetic cocoon that is our human biofield. Mm-hmm. And the bacteria can almost come in on that, slide in on that same kind of pathway. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, ideally, the only thing that should be in our personal space, and not just the space of our body, but our whole energetic field, should be the only thing should be our personal unique signature. It's almost like this beautiful, unique piece of music that no one else has, you know, and it's incredibly weakening and incredibly disruptive if that our boundaries are breached early in life and there's other energies that enter our system, because it's almost then like two pieces of music are being played at the same time. And it's just, you know, that it creates this chaos and can drown out our unique strength and signature. So a lot of times what I've noticed, you know, whether it's small in a small way or a big way, people that are battling like kind of lifelong or many years long situations with chronic infectious disease, they often have, you know, these early childhood injuries or wounds, and then there's things that are a little bit subtler than that. So you've got the, you know, that, and there are plenty of people that don't have that in their personal histories, but you know, we're all also programmed to one degree or another by our familial conditioning, our cultural conditioning, and these kinds of forces imprint deep impressions in our psyche about ourselves. So it really shapes how we feel about ourselves, and therefore what we feel we deserve and the choices that we end up making in our lives. And so, you know, my whole kind of take on health and disease right now has a lot to do with this concept of resonance, dissonance, and this accumulation of dissonance that happens to us as we go through life really can start to weaken our system and make us more susceptible to infections, cancer, you know, whatever it is that we're challenged with.
Yeah. Wow. I really love the way that you put that into words that I can actually visualize, you know, the boundary breach that I think happens for so many people. I think so many people can relate to that. And again, like you're saying, whether it's in your early childhood and it's with the parental figure or it's through society and through our culture, you know, there are breaches that are happening, especially for young people, that stay with us forever. And then we feel like, well, my boundaries were crossed there, so we're just kind of figure that's the way life is, and so we might as well allow other yucky things in. This is all subconscious, of course, but mm-hmm. I totally get that. Thank you for making it a visual practice for me to go through that with you too. I want to get into your work, and I hope you can explain to us what the unified field is and how we can emerge from it. This is a big piece of your work for sure.
Yeah. So the unified field is the way I see it, it's the sea of energy and information that we exist within. And not only do we exist within it, but it exists within us. Mm. And we, and everything else in our physical reality emerges from that. And a lot of my thinking around this is grounded in contemporary physics. And interestingly, you know, for so long, we used to think about space and, you know, kind of when you're looking at being at a subatomic level, you're looking at an atom and you've got these subatomic particles whirling around in this space. Mm-hmm. And we used to think of that space as empty. In fact, it was termed the vacuum. Mm-hmm. In physics, and always referred to as the vacuum, meaning like devoid of anything. And what's changing in new thinking of in physics is this sense that it is absolutely not empty, instead is infinitely full of energy and information. So I feel that, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that everything is emerging from this. And that whole kind of spiritual concept of, oh, we're all one, or we're all connected, you know, we're starting to see, there's actually some scientific evidence for that. We are all part of this one thing. You know, all of creation, all of our physical reality is all stemming from this one thing.
Wow. Yeah. So the unified field. Okay. I mean, that makes total sense. Us being, and I kind of liken it to when we think about the microbiome, you know, we think about this whole set of bugs, a big variety of bugs that make us up, you know, inside of ourselves. And we're really just one little bug in the huge microbiome on this, you know, planet. And then, you know, as you continue out into space, this planet's just one of many and in a collective cosmos. So yeah, that's really beautiful. I love the way that you just are able to kind of configure things so that, I don't know, for me, it helps my brain to see things a little more clearly. So thank you for doing the work to get you to be able to articulate that way. Appreciate it.
I thought it was really cool too. During the Unify event, you said something about how when the sperm hits the egg, there's like a flash of light. Which was really, that was a really cool visual. I also wanted to discuss with you what exactly our three-dimensional blueprint is.
Mm-hmm. So this is conceptual, you know, no one really knows, but, you know, my sense is that everything is emerging from a blueprint of sorts. So I think it's good to maybe before answering that, just step back and say, you know, what is information really? And, you know, if you've got this kind of vast, undifferentiated sea of energy, how does something emerge out of that? Mm-hmm. You know, so a wave has a frequency and a wavelength that kind of distinguishes it from other waves that have a different frequency and a wavelength. So you can almost imagine in this undifferentiated sea, there's certain part that slows down and creates a wave, and then another one with possibly a different frequency, and then they can intersect and create almost like these vortices in the field. And then if you imagine that a vortice would allow for the kind of, it creates the energy and information of a subatomic particle, which then can coalesce with other subatomic particles emerging out of the field to create an atom. And then, so there's this sense that there's a field, like a three-dimensional blueprint of sorts. And I see it as a series of vortices in the field that create the information for something to emerge. And so back to what you were saying is about the sperm and the egg. So when the sperm penetrates the egg, even current science agrees that there is a flash of light. Mm-hmm. And it's actually been shown that the brighter that flash of light is, the healthier the embryo is.
Wow. Mm.
And so my sense is it's like this photoacoustic boom. When this event happens that starts to create this blueprint in the field. Mm-hmm. And then the blueprint is guiding you know, the differentiation and growth as an embryo. And later our exquisitely complex physiology. You know, we've got 37 trillion cells, each with millions of events happening every second in a coordinated manner. And, you know, no one can explain how that is happening. Like, what is actually orchestrating that level of complexity? It's like, we do not have anything that can approximate that in terms of technology or quantum computing or anything like that. You know, so there's this extraordinary miracle happening, and where's that coordination coming from? And so my sense is that it is coming from this blueprint that's providing this kind of coherency and structure and orchestration for our physiology.
And how does exposure to toxins or medications, pathogens, emotional trauma, and, you know, all the environmental pollution like Wi-Fi and all that stuff cause dissonance to that blueprint?
Well, so one thing that I also love to say before I answer that, because I think it's really fundamental to understanding how dissonance plays a role, is that current physics is really talking about now how nothing is static in the universe. Like, there actually, matter is forming and annihilating, trillions of times a second. You know, so how is that happening? And how does it reform? You know, I think that the fact that it does reform is it's according to this blueprint. So the physical body and this blueprint are in this constant communication. You know, it's like the blueprint is forming the body, and then as we go through life, things are happening to us and to our bodies. And every single thing has an energetic signature associated with it. You know, you've got a vitamin, and you can put it on an oscilloscope, and you can read the energetic signature of that, of vitamin C, let's say. You know, or you could put a strep bacteria, or you could put, you know, a toxin like mercury or something like that. Every single thing has an energetic signature. You think about a trauma that we go through, and all of the, you know, perhaps it generated a lot of emotions that we were not fully equipped to completely handle at the time. And so we just kind of stuff those in our system. That all has an energetic signature associated with it that you know, is reverberating. And so the way I see it is, when we pull into our systems things that have energetic signatures that are not necessarily in harmony with that orchestra of our personal signature, those dissonant signatures get kind of overlaid over the blueprint, so to speak, so that then when the blueprint is forming the physical body every trillionth of a second, it's doing so through the dissonance, let's say. So instead of this really crystal clear translation of the blueprint, there begins to be distortion. And that is the nidus, or the beginning of aging, breakdown, disease. You know, and when there's less dissonance that we accumulate, there's this beautiful back and forth communication with the blueprint. You get this high fidelity recording every trillionth of a second, because there's nothing in the way, you know? And so you see like a child, for example, you know, who's just beaming with life and the bright face and radiating beautiful energy and, you know, super energetic and running all around, and like, they're not tired, you know? So you occasionally see it in an adult. You know, you will notice that, especially as you start getting older, and you'll look around at people your own age, and then there's just starts to be such a discrepancy between how quickly people seem to age. You know, like, some people are still very youthful and other people are not. And like, what's at the root of that? You know, I think it's a really important question to ask.
Yeah. So off of that, you know, you listed a lot of the things that we're exposed to in our culture, in our surroundings, from the air we breathe to the media we consume, there's going to be stressors that are unavoidable for sure for humans.
Yeah.
What do we do to keep ourselves in the resonance you're talking about there instead of in that dissonance that causes the hyper aging and the things that we don't want to happen?
Yeah. Well, I really think it's that we need to do our own work so that we kind of unpack our personal programming that affects how we feel about ourselves and what we feel like we deserve, and therefore then dictates the kind of choices that we make. You know, there's going to be things right now in the world that are not necessary, that we're exposed to, that create dissonance in our system that are not necessarily our personal choices. You know, like what's happening environmentally and all the chemicals that are being dumped into the atmosphere and the 5G towers now that are, you know, that's being installed everywhere that we're exposed to, and the chemtrails and, you know, all of that. So those things, you know, affect us, and, you know, they may not be our personal choices, and, you know, we can do what we can to, like, you know, speak about it and speak up and vote or whatever and try to make some changes there. But on a personal level, it's really about the choices that we're making. You know, are we eating food that's nourishing? Are we choosing just comfort foods? You know, are we eating food for fuel? Are we overeating? You know, are we drinking pure structured water or just water out of the tap with the fluoride and the chlorine and, you know, the drug residues and things like that? Are we using personal care products that are not laden with chemicals and estrogen mimicking compounds and, you know, things like that? Or, you know, are we buying them at Safeway? Or, you know, are we happy in our relationships? You know, are we tolerating disrespect? You know, are we living our truth? Are we really living? Are we speaking out, you know, kind of getting in tune with what our true gifts are and expressing those or not? You know, there's just every choice affects how well we resonate with our blueprint, because you're either living a life that like leads to the accumulation of more dissonance, or you're not, or better, you're transmuting the dissonance that has occurred.
Maybe you can speak more on that, the transmutation portion. And I, just to be clear, because dissonance is maybe a word we don't use that often, but I'm hearing dissonance as the word dis-ease, you know, in the sense of anywhere where you're made uneasy, and you're speaking specifically about taking responsibility for the choices that may have brought you to that. So how do we go about transmuting the dissonance that maybe we already experienced? So it's, you know, it's got left its trails in us. It's left a groove in us of trauma. You know, you can talk about it in terms that we use a lot on the show, I guess. So these trauma grooves, how do we go about transmuting those into something that can be a resonance? It can be of higher, brighter light.
Great question. Well, one way I believe is in meditation.
Okay.
So in deep states of meditation, there is an opportunity to become aware of our unique signature and what feels like a foreign addition in our field. You know, for example, you might be sitting in meditation and realize, oh, in my solar plexus, there's a lot of tension in there right now. And then if you sit with it long enough, you might say, oh, okay, that got tweaked when I had an interaction with someone yesterday that reminded me of something that happened to me with my father when I was 10, you know, or what, who knows what it is, but, like, you know, you might have the opportunity to kind of tune in that you had been holding a lot of tension there. And then almost like once you've become aware of it, that's what the body wanted, and then, you know, you can then let it dissipate and let it ground off. Or, you know, you may have, like I said, that unmetabolized emotion from previous traumas or whatnot. And you may start to feel it, you know, held in certain body postures that, you know, have become habitual to you, or, you know, there's a lot of people with their shoulders up or their head forward or whatever. And it's literally like this kind of encoding in the physical body of unresolved energy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like your body contains your biography, your energetic anatomy, you know, stores all of that. So if you tune in on a deep level on a regular basis, there's an opportunity to just kind of identify that and learn from it and to let it go.
Wow. So I'm seeing this as the body, I'm hearing it as the body is a tool for being able to almost witness your three-dimensional blueprint. So then you can get really clear with what your personal unique signature is, so that whenever what you're calling a foreign something, you know, something that doesn't belong to you comes into that space, essentially, whether it's an emotion, it's a some sort of residue from something you experienced comes into that space, you can identify it right away as that's actually not mine. So I don't need to take it on and embody it into my blueprint because it's not resonating with it. It's not aligned with it. And instead look at it clearly, decide what to do with it and move it, you know, out, hopefully, of your body, detox it out of your body one way or another. Mm-hmm. And meditation is a tool that you think is really powerful for getting us clear on that identity with our signature self.
Exactly. Yourself. Once you really figure out who you are and get the sense of that unique vibration of who you are, mm-hmm. then you can figure out who you're not. You know, you can just you can be like, oh, that doesn't feel like me. You know, that doesn't feel like the rest of this. I'm gonna try to tune into it and understand what it is and where it came from, and then decide, do I want to keep that or do I want to let it go?
Why do we have so much damn resistance to tools like meditation, sitting still?
You know, I think it's because it does take some discipline, you know, it takes some discipline. And a lot of people, and I noticed this with, you know, I've had this myself at different points in my life, and then I've seen it with others. It's like, you know, if there is something uncomfortable in the system left over from previous traumas or whatnot, there's this wanting to avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that there's this sense of like, oh, wow, if I tapped into that well, I'd be overcome. You know,
I would be
overwhelmed. Yeah.
It's scary.
And what people will what a lot of times figure out is when they tune into it and tap into it and sit with it, not only are they not overwhelmed, but they almost like become friends with it on some level, you know, and it's actually this process of becoming whole, you know, instead of being fractured. And it is just a really beautiful process. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then you can almost embrace aspects of yourself that have been hidden, you know, or suppressed, as well as, you know, kind of love yourself for what, you know, you've gone through, and kind of give yourself something that you maybe never received, which is the kind of safety, love, acceptance, you know. So really, you know, a lot of times we're not willing to do that ourselves, and then we're looking outside of ourselves for that type of thing, and it never feels like enough, because what we ultimately want is that from ourselves.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that meditation isn't for them, but that they get the same thing from like maybe working out or going for a jog. And I get that that might clear the mind, but there's something that comes from the stillness where you're forced to just tune in, like you said.
Absolutely. I think the you know, whatever it is that stills the mind is a lovely prelude to then sitting in meditation, you know, whether it's breathing exercise or a moving meditation or doing some exercise, but then sitting down and just spending some time with yourself is so important.
Yeah.
And then you were asking, you know, what else can you do to transmute? Yeah. I think your emotional state is so important, and it's very much dictated by our thinking. So, you know, it's like we have a thought, and then that engenders an emotional reaction oftentimes, which is associated with the release of neurotransmitters and hormones that each have their own signatures associated with them. So that cocktail mm-hmm. that's produced has a collective signature that either enhances our health or diminishes our health. And I talked a little previously on that, the talk on Unify that you heard about Dr. David Hawkins, who mapped the vibratory rate of emotional states. Mm-hmm. And he did it with kinesiology testing, which some people don't think is a legitimate scientific tool, but you know, he did this over years with numerous subjects and multiple testers, and the results were reproducible over years. And and so he found that every emotional state has a vibratory rate. Mm-hmm. And he put them on a logarithmic scale from 1 to 1,000. And he said that those that were under 200 were weakening to the body, and those that were over 200 were strengthening. Mm-hmm. And so emotional states like joy, which calibrates at 540 on this logarithmic scale, have this extremely beneficial effect on our physiology. Mm. And I think that the more time we spend in these kind of higher vibrational emotional states of joy, love, peace, bliss,
gratitude,
like these things do have a transmuting effect on dissonant frequencies in our system.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. This is kind of the same question in a different direction, but you mentioned static. How do things that cause static in our lives affect our bodies, our immune system, and maybe what are some examples of those things?
So we talked about a few of them already. So I would say mm-hmm. like dirty electromagnetic field information in our environments, you know, sleeping with our head next to Wi-Fi, or mm-hmm. you know, having a Wi-Fi router going all night, even smart meters on our home, like that creates a level of static that affects us. Mm-hmm. But so do low vibrational emotional states.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you walk around and you're constantly angry about things, like angry about you know, how someone treated you, or how much time your kids want to spend with you, or like, you know, how much work you have to do, or that you have to commute to work, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you just constantly are like looking at everything and just upset about it, instead of saying, you know, why, first off, why don't my kids want to spend time with me? Or why am I doing a job I don't like? Or, you know, that creates a ton of static if you're constantly walking around like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when we eat foods that are not organic, you know, they're laden mm-hmm. with pesticides, mm-hmm. herbicides, foods that are genetically modified, mm-hmm. Foods that aren't full of life force, but are packaged and highly processed, you know, that creates static.
Yeah. And probably a lot of what we're watching, like if you're, fear generated news,
especially right now,
especially violent movies, maybe even, you know, things like porn.
Absolutely. I think about that a lot, and you know, I've really been trying to counsel my patients right now to just like, if you need to take a break from the media, please do, because it's just, I think it's weakening people.
Yeah.
And when you do get out, because I feel like all of us, you know, we're kind of shut in, or we don't get enough time out in nature, especially right now with what's going on. I happened to have taken a nature walk 2 days ago that was long overdue because I've been shut in for a while. And you can't help but be joyous and blissful in nature. You will find a reason to... Mm-hmm. You know, I was listening to someone who we're a big fan of, Eric Godsey, the other day, talk about nature, because someone asked him who was, someone was living in New York and sent a question in that said, how can I experience more nature when I'm in the middle of the city? And he said, remember that you're in nature. You are nature. Like, you're literally the city that's built up around you is part of your anthill, essentially. You know, you're in nature at all times, but sometimes you do need to physically be near a tree or, you know, physically be on earth, on the ground. I wanted to ask you if you're open to sharing, and if you're not, don't worry, we can cut this out. But because we're talking about all these ways to identify in ourselves where we might be breeding this like toxicity and this dissonance, where we could be better about being more coherent or more having resonance with our thoughts, or I want to call it like alignment, you know, with what our signature self is, like, to use your words. Do you have some big places that when you started doing that inner spiritual psychological work for yourself, when you were working on curing yourself of Lyme disease, were there some big epiphanies that came out of that you were like, oh, like, aha, like, this was a moment where I definitely see this was tying itself to all these diseases, diseases, I should say, you know, all these places in me that were uneasy. Did you have any of those moments that you could like identify specifically, maybe for a person listening that goes, I don't even know what that looks like?
Yeah. I think for me, it was noticing that I wasn't fully inhabiting my body.
Mm.
I wasn't fully grounded in my system. And it was almost like living from here up more, you know, just more in my head and not fully grounded in. And so then I needed to realize, like, oh, okay, there were some things in my early childhood that created some kind of disruption in my first chakra, let's say, that affected my grounding and just my sense of really owning this incarnation, you know, this physical body of mine. Like, I'm a spirit, but I'm in a physical body. I've chosen to be here. I'm going to own this completely, you know? And so I think that when people are not fully embodied, there's an opportunity for other things to fill where what you're not occupying, you know? So, and that's kind of, I'm speaking on an energetic level.
Yeah.
So then that was where, in my case, the bug, the Lyme bacteria kind of got a foothold, because there was some vacancy, you know, that it could fill. And so then I needed to really own certain parts of my being and realize places where, you know, I wasn't so present, literally on a physical level. Then there would be worse circulation and, you know, kind of constricted energy. And that's where the Borrelia bacteria wanted to just take hold, because it's like it could kind of replicate unimpeded in that area. My immune system wasn't going in there to rushing in to take care of it. So it's like, as I was kind of starting to occupy my whole being, it's like everything was, my body could rush in and take care of things.
Was that about getting into more of a heart-centered space instead of being intellectual about your issues? So was that, and that came through meditation, a lot of sitting with yourself?
Yeah, meditation, working with a couple healers, and I ended up going through one of the most powerful things I did was I attended the Academy of Intuition Medicine in Sausalito, near where I live, and it was this 2-year program of meditating and just spending time in my energetic anatomy and learning about that and really learning how to differentiate what we were talking about before, my unique signature from the signature of other things, and clear that and just fully own my space.
Gosh, why does it seem like that's the last thing we learn on this planet, if we ever learn it while we're in these human bodies?
Yeah. I know. It I would
backwards
love it if we just train our kids like that.
Yeah. Seems very backwards for sure.
Yeah. Sure does.
At least I feel like it's starting to be the trend to where like maybe the next generation or the generation after will be different. You brought up before that viruses are not alive and that our emotional state has so much power over what happens when a virus does enter our body. But what else can we do to strengthen our immune system?
When we think about our immune system, it's this incredibly intricate, coordinated set of different types of cells and all these various intermediates. You know, it's a very complex system. So one thing is that's critical is this resonating with our blueprint in a seamless way, because that provides this beautiful orchestration of our immune system. So on a physical level, you know, there's certain supplements that are really helpful, like beta-glucan is one of my favorites right now, because it is taken up, when it's cleaved to the right size, it's taken up by roving macrophages that are like our immune surveillance cells. And then that triggers gene expression in the macrophage, which produces large quantities of intermediates that then orchestrate and initiate other aspects of the immune response. So beta-glucan is a lovely thing, and then of course a lot of nutrients we know about, like, you know, vitamin C and zinc and some herbs, astragalus, andrographis, echinacea, and vitamin D, all very important for our immune system. But you know, everything else we've talked about so far is super important for our immune system. You know, keeping our emotional vibration up. So not succumbing to the fear, you know, really buying into this kind of fear-based media that we're all being exposed to.
Yeah.
You know, maybe trying to either distance ourselves from that or think critically about what we're being told. I really think it's an absolute shame. I think there's a lot of misinformation being propagated in conventional channels, you know, CNN, and, you know, like, not just on social media with people that are don't really know what they're talking about, but really coming from what the vast majority of people think are trusted sources, credible sources, you know, like, and then I think sadly, you know, policies are being made by politicians that don't have a true appreciation for the science, and they are also buying into the misinformation being fed them.
And it's also profit over people, and
it gets to a very slippery place where we get into censorship as well. So it's like, at what point do we start censoring? And, you know, and then that's a whole freedom we're taking away, and another boundary that's been breached. So
absolutely. So if I could do anything right now, I'd encourage people to think critically, you know, just think critically. It's like
for themselves,
you know? So it's like, we can't, you know, a lot of our healing process and coming to a state of health is to look at everything that we were taught, really, that imprinted and like programmed us with beliefs that affect how we feel about ourselves, beliefs that affect the choices that we make. And a healing process is really going in and dissecting each and every one of those and saying, do I want to keep this one or should I throw it out? Like, is it helping me or is it not? You know, and so that is absolutely the stance that we need to be taking every day with what is coming at us from the media. It's like, does this sound correct?
Yeah.
Or not? Is there a motivation behind this? And if so, what is it?
It's hard with the critical thinking, because you have some people that their critical thinking is just trusting CDC because they spend billions of dollars on research. And so they're like, how could my critical thinking be any better than billions of dollars of research? So I'm just going to trust what the CDC says. And then there's people who are thinking, their critical thinking is, well, yeah, but they're making even more off vaccinations. And so I'm not going to trust what they're saying because they don't actually have my best interest at heart. And then those people are posting so much of their strong feelings, and that's, you know, part of the fear. and the anger even towards each other. But I was curious.
This is the end of part one. Tune in next week for part two. We'll see you there.
It's the magic hour, Mercedes and Jay.